And we're holding on Pavlov Ahmed Bey's second line from the bottom. We started a discussion yesterday where Rav and Shmuel had said that if a person is selling grain or wine or whatever to somebody else, and he says, "I'm selling you a kor," which a kor is a measure that contains 30 saw for 30 sloim. Then the whole thing is one package deal, and therefore until he reach and therefore as long as they haven't measured out the full amount, then he could still back out of the deal because it's even though at this point we'd measured out 29 already, but never and even though he did Mashiach on it already and everything, but nevertheless he still doesn't coin it until the entire 30 is measured out. On the other hand, if he had said Kor b'shloshim sa b'sela, if he said the kor is for 30, and within that each individual sa is for a sela, then we said that then we said that no, every sa is considered an independent transaction, and therefore each one as it's measured out and as the lekeach does some form of kinyan on it, whether hagbah, whether it's in his keli, et cetera, then it'll work, and he's koinet, and the moicher can't back out of the deal. So the Gemara says Toshma. Let's try to bring a proof. And the question is going to be on Rav and Shmuel. A brisa says a seichres a poel las imel a garden. A person hires a worker where he's the worker is going to be working with him in the granary, and he pays him now in Nisan that the guy is going to be working for him later on in the year during the harvest season. And he makes up with him hayoim b'dinner. Every day he's going to pay him every day he's going to pay him a dinner. The like golden yofasella, and then at the time of the now he's hiring him in advance later on during the harvest season because there's going to be a greater demand for labor. Then the same person would be able to charge a sella every day. So now, in other words, so because he's hiring him early and pay because he's hiring him early and paying him early. Then therefore he's getting the labor for a quarter of the price. There's four dinarim to a seller, so he's getting him for a quarter of the price that he would if he paid him later in the season. So also lahonas hemenu. So you're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to have hana from that work of his later on because it comes out then that you have a case of ribis to rabbanim. This is what we learned about in Bava Metzia extensively. You have the concept called agar noter that when you have you're paying him extra because when you're paying him extra because you're waiting for the delivery of the material, or in this case, for the work, then that kind of thing is also as a form of ribis. So, in effect, in other words, you're prepaying now a dinner for you're going to get a seller's worth of work later on, and that's and that doesn't work. Avalim socher ma'ayoyim b'dinner la'yoyim v'la'gorin yofasela, but if he hired him that as of today, you're going to start working for me, and it's going to be at a dinner for a day, a dinner per day. And later on during the harvest season, it's going to be that same work is going to be worth a sella. So now, in other words, in the first case, he just says, I'm arranging with you now in Nisan. You're not going to start working for me until later on in the season, until Tishrei time or whatever it is. And then you'll be but now I've prepaid you a few months in advance a dinner per day. So that's a problem. But now we're saying, the flip side is what you do is you pay him the full amount now, but he starts working for you now. So yes, later on in the season, his work is going to be worth more, but that's fine because now already you hired him and he started working for you. So therefore, so now all the 100 days or whatever amount of time you made up with him is considered one long amount. So therefore, there's no agar nutter because he began working right away. So now the now you're telling me Rav and Shmuel that when it comes to selling grain or whatever it is, you're saying that each saw when he says a core for 30, a sub per sella, then each one counts as an individual transaction. And therefore, we're saying he's able to change his mind in the middle of it. Or therefore, we're saying that when he changes his mind in the middle of it, whatever Akinyan had been accomplished on is already done. And he can't change his mind on those. Well, then, by the same logic, Kochinami, Kama Kama Mifsek Pasak. Well, then it should come out the same thing over here. The 100 days, we should break up. He did say that it's going to be one dinner per day, so it should be the same kind of thing. Yes, he said, work for me between now and the harvest and the granary season, and it's going to be X number of days, but I'm paying you X amount. But he also said the rate is one dinner per day. So it should be exactly the same kind of thing. Every day should be considered an individual thing. Given that at any time either one of them could change their mind, then each one should be considered a separate sale. And now you're back to the problem of ago neter, because he's prepaying him now in Nissan for what the guy is going to be working for him in Yemos HaGodin, in the harvest and granary season, which is Tishrei time. So doesn't that show, in other words, that there's no distinction? Once he said that even though he said, so in the case of the 30, in the case of the kor, even if he says kor b'shloshim, even though he says sar b'sela, we should say that it's not considered separate transactions, and either one can back out partway through it, and that would mean the whole sale is voided. And then applying that to the worker over here, it would mean, in other words, again, that we're talking about one long period from now until the harvest season, and then fine, he hired him to begin with, and the guy started working for him at a lower price, and therefore it should work. So that's the question. Hachinami kama kama hachinami kama kama mifsak pasak. We should say that each day individually is a separate thing that they made up, a separate term of work. And each time the worker can decide he doesn't want to work, he wants to quit the job. So therefore it should be also to have from him, it should be also to have hana from him at the rate of one dinner midino layoim. And should be also to have hana from him at the rate of one dinner per day. And we're saying that each day from now until the granary yofas sela is going to be also lahanas men and bedinu layoim. It should be also to have hanah from him at the rate of one dinner per day. V'lagoden yofas sela mutter. And you're saying, on the other hand, in the braisa, that it's fine, even though the price of labor, of the same kind of labor, is going to go up later during the granary season. So what do you mean? Why should it be mutter? Amai v'ha'agoneter lihu? Isn't it a problem of agoneter? And the fact that we're saying that it is allowed seems to show that there should be no distinction whether, in the case of sales, whether you mention the point of it being a saw per seller or not. Either way, we should say whether you're saying a core for 30 or whether you're also adding the detail of one saw per seller. Either way, it should be considered the same thing. It's one big deal. And therefore he can back out at any time during it, because that's the only way, on the face of it, to make this deal, to make this din with the worker, to be able to make it work without having a problem of agoneter, because otherwise you're saying that each day is considered a separate transaction. And then you have the problem that he's prepaying for something which is going to be worth much more later on, and that's the problem of agoneter. So the Gemara says, Omar Rava. So Rava answers back. So you're telling me you find that a problem, the Tispera, but how do you think that that's such a problem? Zalzuli b'schiros mi osir. After all, listen, is there an Isser in working for cheaper? After all, with a loan or a sale or something like that, then you have issues of agoneter and issues of ribis. As far as all of that. So even if he prepays him and he doesn't midaraisa, it would be mutter. So if it was a loan, then you have a problem. Mekach memka, you also have things, there's aynah, there's bitul mekach involved. So in other words, it's not for sure that the sale is going to go through. But when it comes to work, then we can't say, yes, it can happen that a person is going to work, that a person is going to work for cheaper. He needs the money now because he doesn't have money, and therefore he's willing to, and therefore he's willing to give a deep discount. So therefore, at least in the sefer, there should be no problem of ribis. In fact, Tosfos actually adds that at the end of the previous Amud that yeah, I mean you the you do have we learned in a Mishnah in Bava Metzia in Perek Ezo Neshech when we learned about all these dinim, we talked about that you're allowed to make to a certain extent such deals as far as the price of labor, and that's the point we're talking about that based on our Gemara over here, only if the worker starts the work right away. We're saying not if you prepay him now and he's only going to start the work later on. Well, so the Gemara says, so in other words, in short, Rava is saying the difference is that here you don't have any money actually, you have money changing hands, you don't have any goods actually that are going to be that you're not doing a loan, you're not selling any goods, you're talking about labor. And therefore, yes, he's entitled to say, right now I'm short of money, so therefore I'm willing to. So therefore, as long as you prepay me for my labor, then I'll work. Then I'll do work for you late. Well, so now, so we're saying. So in that case, we're still saying it would be a problem if he's only going to start working later on. It only helps if he's starting to work now. So that brings the Gemara's question. Maishna resha, maishna sefer. Well, in that case, then what's the difference? If that's the case, then it should be allowed in the resha as well, where the guy's only going to be starting work for him several months from now. Why are we saying that? In that case, you still have a problem of ago neter. And the answer is resha d'leka oved ba'adei mehashta, because the difference is in the resha, the worker is not actually starting to work now. Mechsi ki ago neter li. So therefore, you still do have the appearance of ago neter because it's a chumra ba'alma. Rashbam says since he's not actually working now, and now then and the employer already prepaid him now, then therefore it has more of the appearance of ribis. So again, it wouldn't be. Oh, it's true. There's no case over here where it would be also d'oraisa, but nevertheless, it's still close enough to ribis to ago neter that we're going to say it's also safer to call it ba'adei mehashta as opposed to the safer. The worker is starting to work right away. Lo mechsi ki ago neter, so it doesn't even look like ago neter because you're paying him now because he started the work now. So therefore, even though the fact is later on in the season, the same work is going to be worth a lot more, but he's already working for you now. So therefore, there's no, it doesn't even look like ago neter. It looks more like you're just continuing to pay him at the same rate that he's been receiving all this time.
Is ago neter?
Say
Is
what?
ago neter? Is ago neter only for money, or is any type of benefit?
I mean, it can include what it can include. Primarily, it's money. I mean, again, the whole issue. Most cases of ago neter are only also d'rabbanan, so the Chum aren't going to outlaw all of them. We learned in Ezer Neshech, but yeah, I mean, there can be ago neter involving non-monetary benefits as well. In general, yeah, any time that you're gaining something, anytime that you're gaining something financially from the fact that the other guy is not delivering you that he's not delivering you the merchandise yet or whatever, and you prepaid him and he's giving you a discount because of that, yeah.
But eventually you're going to pay back, so
Eventually, you're going to pay, but that's, I mean, but nevertheless, the point is you're gaining something now. You're gaining a discount now for the fact that you're waiting to get the merchandise. And any time, for example, think of it. You have all kinds of things sometimes where people will say if you have an early bird discount, for example. So sometimes you have issues of ribis involved. Depending on the exact circumstances, you can't always do that. Here, in effect, that's what the guy is doing. He's getting an early bird discount on the work because if he waited until the harvest season to hire the guy, he'd have to pay him four times as much. So now we're saying, though, if the one way around that is that the guy starts working for him right away, the worker starts working for him right away, and then there's not even an appearance of ago neter because, okay, then he's starting to work for you now and he's just continuing throughout the season.
ribis is when you get extra, not when you get less. Here you're talking about.
No, not that you're getting less. You're paying less for this for an amount of merchandise or an amount of work that later on is going to be worth more. Again, what we're saying is now I'm paying you 100 dinar for work that for work that if I was going to first hire you later in the season when I actually need you to start working, then I would be paying you 400 dinar, 100 the 100 sela for the same amount of work. Now, like this, so therefore, that's the agoneter is the whole issue. In other words, I'm paying you less and I'm getting back more for, and I'm getting back more than what I paid for later on. But now we're saying that if he's that in the case of work, as long as he's working for you now, then you don't have that issue.
But even if you're going to pay, you're not paying less now, you're just paying something that is going to happen in the future.
You're paying now for something that's going to happen in the future, but you're paying at a discounted price. The guy is giving you a
discount. You don't know.
What do you mean you don't know?
You don't
know,
know
that you know that later on in the season, this kind of work is going to be worth more. It's a normal thing. It's a normal thing in a farm economy that during the off season, labor is cheap. And during the harvest season, it's worth more because you have a supply and demand, right? You have the same number of workers available. And during the during the harvest season, you might have a much higher demand. So now you, the farm owner, if you wanted to wait to hire this worker until later, you would have to be paying him a larger amount. Now that you're hiring him early, then you're paying him a discounted rate and he's going to give you the same amount of work either way. So there's your problem of agoneter because you paid him early. Therefore, he's giving you more. And that's a problem. That's a problem of ribis de rabbanan. But now that he's
A supply of clothes that are going to be used in the summer. I buy them in the winter because they're less expensive.
If you're taking delivery of the merchandise right now, then there's no issue of agoneter. They're yours and they're in your possession and whatever happens to them. We're not talking about that. What if, for example, you were to prepay now for clothes or whatever that you're going to take delivery of later in the year, and he's going to say, listen, if you were to pay me later in the year, then you would get 10... You would get 10 suits or whatever for this price. Now instead, because you're prepaying me early, then I'm going to give you 15. That's agoneter. That's classic agoneter, and it's a problem because now he's giving you more for the fact that you're giving you for the fact that you're prepaying him in advance. We learned about all about this in Brahma Tzia. Kol agoneter osur. Any time that you're saying you're I'm going to give you something extra because you're waiting to take delivery of the merchandise and you're not taking it now, then you have isurim in it, and then you have the various dinim of ribis that are involved.
That's midrabanan, right?
That's midrabanan. Yeah, midaraisa would only be by loans and only when you make it up in advance. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right, onward. The Mishnah had said, okay. So this was all a little bit of a digression from the main topic of the Mishnah. The point was that we had brought a braisa about Arba Midas v'Moichrim, that there were four different in Peheyam and Aleph. Actually, we had brought a braisa that mentions that there were four situations as far as buying and selling merchandise, We analyzed that braisa in detail, and the last thing we had was when we brought Rav and Shmuel's statement about when he's selling a kor for 30, etc. So we had brought that braisa to try to disprove him. So that was why we brought in this point, and then we went and finished off and explained that. So now getting back to the Mishnah, we said we described in the Mishnah like this. Back on Pei Dalet Amud Beis, you can have where a person buys a bundle of payers. So we said that once he does Meshicha, then he's done, then the kinyan has been accomplished, even if he didn't measure out the exact amount yet, as we learned there, as long as they had made up a price already. So therefore, he has a Smichas Das, he's willing to buy at that price. So we said he does Meshicha and then it works. But then we said when he buys flax, then he has to actually pick it up. Because as we talked about previously, the Gemara, the point was that flax is not in, that flax comes generally in smaller bundles and you're able to pick it up. And therefore you need to do that rather than bring Meshicha. What we said, another point is as well, it's easy enough to unbundle it and pick it up stalk by stalk. But now the Mishnah had said, if the flax is attached to the ground, then v'tolash kol shehu, and he pulls any of the flax out of the ground, kona, then he's acquiring all of the flax. So the Gemara says, what's the logic? Mishum detolash kol shehu kona. How does such a kinyan work? Because he pulled out a little bit of the flax, therefore he's kona all of the flax in that field. How does that work? We're talking about over here. The seller tells him, go and improve some of the karka for yourself. And with that, you will acquire everything that's on that karka. Now, karka itself is acquired with chazaka, and one form of chazaka on karka is that you're improving it. So here you're saying, by pulling out a stalk of flax from there, you're improving that patch of ground that eventually will be able to replant it. So therefore, so the point is that the point the Mishnah wants to tell us is that the chazaka on the karka helps. Now, he's not selling him the land in this case; he's only selling him the flax that's growing in it. Nevertheless, first of all, the Mishnah wants us to know that that works. You shouldn't think that chazaka on land works only for the land itself. Here, it works even though the land itself is not changing hands at all. And second of all, it's that this is not very much of a chazaka; it's only a minor kind of chazaka of picking a little bit of flax that he's able to acquire the rest of it. So therefore, what the Mishnah wants us to know is that works. For that matter, that Ashbam adds also, if he picked some of the Pishkan and the intention was to acquire the land itself, so the guy is selling him the land and he's going to do his chazaka on the land, which will accomplish the Kenyan by pulling out some of the flax, and then Ashbam says that would work also. That's according to the Rashbam. Tosfos learns a little differently that what it means is that that now by doing that, by pulling out one stalk of flax, in effect, what the Moicher is telling him, when you do that, this place will become like your chotzer to the extent that you'll be able to be kona what's in it, and therefore he's kona what, and therefore he's kona it. So the point is, in other words, the Rashbam is understanding that what it is he's doing a chazaka on the land, and he's not acquiring any rights on the land itself, not even temporarily, but nevertheless it works for the flax that's attached, whereas Tosfos is saying he's getting temporary rights to the land, that he's borrowing the land until for the purpose of acquiring the flax that's on it. Okay. Mishnah says, continuing on the topic of selling, of buying and selling, so the Mishnah says, "Hamurchu yain v'shemen l'chaver." A person sells wine or oil to somebody else, and the first part of the din that we're talking about in the Mishnah would apply equally well to any other kind of commodities. The Rashbam says we're mentioning wine and oil because further on in the Mishnah we're going to talk about letting drops ooze out, and of course that's not going to apply to solids. Anyway, v'hukru oshahuzlu. Now, in the middle of the deal, after they had made up the price, the going price went up or down. If that happened before the measure is filled up, then it still belongs to the seller, and therefore he could back out, or actually either of them could back out. We're going to see in the Gemara what we're talking about. Who does the keli belong to? That we should say that at this point it belongs to the moicher until it's full, and then it belongs to the lekeach, because after all we talked about before that the keli of the lekeach is not going to work in the reshus of the moicher, and vice versa. And on the other hand, if it's a place where his keli is koina, then it should be koina, then should be koina even before it's filled up, especially because we learned yesterday, you could have, even you're measuring out liquids, you can have, like we said, like we learned yesterday in the Gemara, Shnosis Hayubahin, you can have a large keli that has markings in it up till here is X number of logim, and therefore that would be the equivalent of saying that I'm selling you each log individually, and therefore he would acquire it individually. So we're going to see in the Gemara whose keli we're talking about here. Anyway, so the Mishnah says, Iman Shalon is smaller Samida, if it happens, if the change in price happens, and of course it doesn't have to be a change in price, Tosfos says, you know, I mean, it could be any reason. Usually, the most likely situation where one of them would want to change their mind is where the prices have changed, and now the seller figures he can buy it more cheaply someplace else, or the seller figures that he can sell it more someplace else, or the buyer figures that he can buy it more cheaply someplace else. Anyway, so if it was before the measure got filled up, lamoicher, then it still belongs to the seller, and therefore either one can change his mind. Mishnah smalas hamida. If it happens after the measure is completely filled up, lelekeach, then it belongs to the lekeach, and neither one at that point can change his mind. What about if there was a middleman between them? So you have so a sarasur, and we're going to see in the Gemara that the we're going to see in the Gemara that the case we're talking about then is the keli belongs to him. Now, now that's what does a middleman do? Is he buys from one and he resells to the next one at a profit? So then, if there was a sarasur between them, nishbara hachavis, if in the middle the barrel breaks, nishbara la sarasur, then it's on the sarasur, it's on this middleman that he's the one who has to bear the loss because he we're using his keli, and therefore we said that. And therefore, we say so as it's placed into his keli. The point is that Ashbam says you shouldn't think that he's only a shliach of the lekeach. And then when the keli gets filled up, then automatically it's the lekeach's responsibility, and he's the one who bears the loss. No, it's still the sarasur's at this point because it's his keli. That's according to Ashbam. Tosfos brings from the Rivam that no, the question is, in that case, then why mention the case where it broke? Do the same thing as in the first part of the Mishnah where the price went up or down. So rather, Tosfos says we're talking about that the sarasur is measuring out where usually he himself, usually just the measuring alone, he gets a fee for doing that. Now in the middle of the measuring, the barrel broke because The thing is, we say we put the blame on him that he's the one who caused the breakage because he obviously wasn't careful while he was measuring. Here, in effect, they hired him to measure for them, and he broke it. So therefore, so the responsibility is on him. Mishnah is saying. All right. The Mishnah continues. V'chayev lahatif lo sholosh tipin. Now, another din is when you're selling liquids, wine or oil or whatever to somebody else, then you have to, so what do? You take your container and you turn it upside down and start pouring the liquid from it into the chaos container. And so we're saying once it stops, once the major pouring of it has stopped, you have to let three more drops go. Now, inevitably, you're going to have some of the liquid, some of the wine or the oil is going to be stuck to the sides of the container that you're pouring from. So after all of it after the bulk of it has finished pouring out, then you have to also pour him out three more drops. And then at that point, anything else that's stuck to the sides is going to belong to the moicher. On the other hand, it continues the mission here. Kino mitzis. If on the other hand the seller continues, So at that point, having done that, once he's gotten to the point where after the bulk of the pouring has been done and three more drops has come out, if now at that point the seller continues to keep the container upside down and hikina, he inclined it to keep liquid flowing out, to keep liquid flowing out from it, umitzis, and he collects more of what was still stuck to the sides, hareyu shomoicher, then that belongs to the seller because the lekeach already gave up on that. He wasn't going to sit there until every drop comes out of the original. Once the three drops have come out, then at that point he's miyayish on the rest, and therefore the seller can keep him those amounts. The Mishnah in Masechta Beitza, by the way, tells us that there were storekeepers in Yerushalayim before the Churban, Abba Shol ben Botnis, and the father of Reb Tzadik, where they were doing that. They were selling wine, oil, and other liquids like that to customers, and over time they gradually built up a stock of these leftovers that were stuck to the sides of the barrels, when they're pouring it from their container into the lekeach, inevitably some of it is left behind, and eventually when they had hundreds of barrels of that from years and years like that, then they brought it. They didn't want to keep it for themselves. They wanted to go to the Lefnim Meshuras Hadin, even though the Chacham told them technically based on this Mishnah it belongs to you. They didn't want that, so eventually the Chacham told them, fine, if you really don't want to keep it, go use it for Tzorchei Rabin. Go use it for things that the public is going to use, like various kinds of public infrastructure, and that way the people to whom those little bits would have belonged are also going to benefit from those, whether we're talking about like water pits and things like that, water pits, roads, things like that. So but Me'ikar Adin, of course, they wouldn't have needed to do that based on our mission over here, because the Lekeach is not going to bother getting every last bit that comes out of the container. There is actually the Rimi Gash gives a different explanation. Actually, he says that that the three drops means once you're finished pouring out from your barrel, then you need to add three drops. Then you have to add three drops. But the Rashba asks on that, why should he need to do that? Now, we are going to learn later on in the Perek, there are cases when you're selling something, you have to add a little bit extra. Tzadik Mishalei V'Tenlacha, we're going to learn later on Daf Pei Tes Tzadik about that. But nevertheless, that shouldn't require him in this case to add three drops, just everything that was in the container. So again, the Rashbam says that what it means is the other way around, that once three drops have come out, then you don't need to do anything else. Next, now a storekeeper doesn't even have to do that. He doesn't even have to do the three drops, because he's busy. He's busy. So he has a lot of customers. So therefore, the Chacham didn't want to be matriach him to do that as well. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Erev Shabbos im Chashecha Potter. Rabbi Yehuda says on Erev Shabbos, when it's close to dark, then he's Potter. We're going to see in the Gemara, is Rabbi Yehuda saying that there's Rabbi Yehuda being makel over the Chachamim, and saying that here the Chachamim are saying that a regular person needs to do the three drops, and Rabbi Yehuda is saying on Erev Shabbos late in the day, even a regular person doesn't need to? Or is Rabbi Yehuda going on the Seifa and saying a storekeeper would say never has to do the three drops, and Rabbi Yehuda would say most of the time he does, only Erev Shabbos in Chashecha does he not? So
what about Erev Yom Tov?
Erev Yom Tov is not necessarily the same thing, because Yom Tov, you have a little more, you're allowed to carry, for example. I don't know, the mission doesn't say one way or the other, but Erev Yom Tov, you could say it's the same kind of thing because he's not going to be able to take money soon, but you could say it's different because on Shabbos you can't carry and on Yom Tov you can. The fact is, I mean, you have Mishnayos and Beitza that talk about selling even on Yom Tov, you're allowed, a storekeeper is allowed to sell. There's many dinim involved, including that he can't measure out exactly. Anyway, the girsa that
so
we have,
people can sell on Yom Tov.
You have people are going to need wine or oil or whatever on Yom Tov, and yeah, the Mishnah and Beitza, that same Mishnah that talks about Abishol ben Botnis and the father of Tzadik, mentions that point. That you're allowed to, for example, go out to a storekeeper on Yom Tov and say, here, I have this keli, I need you to fill it with wine or with oil or whatever, and we'll figure out the details after Yom Tov, and that's fine. It can't be a keli that's known to have a certain measure, and there's a few other dinim involved, but basically, yes. Because Simchas Yom Tov, after all, a person may run out of food or drink during Yom Tov, and he's going to go and get more, yeah. Anyway. The girsa we have in the Mishnah in front of us over here is that a chenveni is ene chayev lahatif sholosh tipin, that he's not chayev to do the three drops. And again, the Rashbam is saying because he's busy. Now, there are Rishonim, the Rabbein Hanano and the Rif, have a girsa that the Hanakama is saying, chenveni chayev lahatif, that no, the storekeeper is required to do the three drops. In other words, the point is, we shouldn't think because the storekeeper is busy, then therefore we should patter him from that. And then Rabbi Yehuda is saying that Erev Shabbos maybe is different. Two different major gersois in the Mishnah. All right. So the Gemara says now in the reisha of the Mishnah. So we're saying again that he's selling wine or oil. We're saying until the container is filled up, then it still belongs to the mocher. So the question is, hamida deman, who does the container belong to? If it belongs to the buyer, then why adshal and ismalas midal mocher? Why does it belong to the mocher even before it's filled completely, until it's completely filled up? After all, it's the lekeach's keli, and therefore he should be kona whatever goes into it, as in fact we learned before. We had the braisa of the four midas back on Daf Pehe, and we said over there that when it's the keli of the lekeach, then he's kona. Now, we did have Rav and Shmuel's din about when we're saying if you're selling the whole thing as one lump sum, but fine. But here in particular, the Rashbam says again, we did also learn that when the keli has markings in it to show up until this point is X number of lugim or X number of gallons or whatever it is, then we said as it reaches each of those, then you're koina on that one, because they made a deal. The deal was that it's going to be X amount that it's going to be X amount per lug. So the Rashbam asks, so why does the Gemara wonder about why it shouldn't work, why he hasn't acquired it until the keli is filled up? Why don't we just say very simple that here we're talking about where there's no markings like that. But the thing is, the Mishnah is just saying generically. So therefore, we have to understand the Mishnah is saying anytime, as long as it's not filled up, even if he said, I'm selling you the hin for for X amount, and within that, each lug is X amount, then still we'd say he's been not being kona until the whole hin is filled up. Well, why is that? It's like chaos keli. He should acquire each amount as it comes to that market. So you're going to say that instead we're talking about a keli that belongs to the seller. Then why, as soon as it's filled up, does it automatically belong to lekeach? After all, it's the moicher's keli, and he hasn't done any kinyan. He hasn't done hagbah or anything like that. And the Rashbam adds, given that earlier in the previous sugya, we asked the question, what about if the lekeach's keli is in the moicher's reshus, or vice versa, doesn't work, and we ended up leaving the question open, then we can't say, we're talking about over here, that's the moicher's keli in the lekeach's reshus, because then we could have easily answered the question based on that. So what's the case where the Mishnah is talking about, where the distinction is whether it's filled up or not? So the answer is, Amar Rav Ila b'midas sarser. We're talking about in the Mishnah over here where the keli belongs to the sarser, to the middleman. So then it's like the Braisa of the Arba Midas, where we said if the keli doesn't belong to either one of them, and we said that's what it means, that it belongs to a sarser, and he's lending it to them for the purpose of facilitating the transaction. And therefore, we're saying until they finish measuring, it belongs to the mocher. And once they finish measuring, it belongs to the lekeach. Well, our Mishnah is saying exactly as that Braisa had said. So therefore, as long as it's not filled up, then they're still in the middle of measuring, and therefore it belongs to the mocher, and either one can back out of the deal. And once they finish measuring, then automatically that keli now belongs. Now that keli has been lent to the lekeach for him to be able to take the merchandise home. And therefore, at that point, he's kona. And again, we'd have to be talking about that it's in a simta, it's in a chotzer that belongs to either one of them. Because as we learned before, if it was in a chotzer that belonged to the moicher, then it wouldn't necessarily work. And if it was in Rishos Rabim, it wouldn't work either. Okay. So there are Rishonim who learn that actually that maybe it could actually work in the Rishus of the that it could be in the Rishus of the Lekeach as well. Because again, the point is, until they finish measuring, it's still a keli that belongs to the moicher, and therefore it's in the lekeach's property, and therefore it wouldn't work. That depends on the machlokas rishonim that we talked about the other day, whether when we said that one person's keli and the other one's reshus doesn't work unless he gave him specific permission to put it there, is that a matter of suffix, or is it a matter of that it vadai doesn't work? So the Gemara says, wait a minute.
What is it?
Yeah.
So what is it? Is it Safek? Is it Halacha?
Different opinions among the Rishonim. Everybody agrees that it doesn't work. The keli of the Mocher and the Rishus of the Lekeach, or vice versa. Everybody agrees it doesn't work. The question is, on what grounds does it not work? Is it because it's a matter of a Safek whether it works, or is it that it's definitively that it doesn't work? We talked about that a few days ago. The Yad Ramah points out an Afkamina in it. What happens if you did both? What happens if you had it in a keli belonging to the seller in the property of the Lekeach, and later on in a keli of the lekeach and the property of the mocher? If you say it's a suffix one way or the other, you've covered your bases. But if you say it's vadai not, then not. Anyway, the point is, Rav Ila is saying our Mishnah is also talking about that scenario. The keli doesn't belong to either one of them, it belongs to the sarsu. Well, the Gemara asks, "Well, Mitkatani Sefer, he marries Sarasa Benayim." What do you mean? The continuation of the Mishnah first brings in the Sarasa. That if there's a Sarasa involved, Nishpada Achavis, then if the barrel breaks, Nishpada the Sarasa, then it's there, then it's on the Sarasa and it's his loss, according to Rashbam, because it belongs to him still at this point, and according to Tosfos, because they hired him to do the measuring and he was obviously careless. So Mikal Duresha Lab Sarasa Eskinim. Evidently, the Duresha is not talking about where there's a Sarasa. And the answer is the Gemara says no. Reisha midabloy sarsur, sefer sarsur atzmai. Because in the Reisha, we're talking about that the sarsur himself is not involved in the measuring. He lent them the keli in order to facilitate the transaction, but he himself is not doing the measuring over there. So implicitly, therefore, he's lending it to the moicher until they finish, and then afterwards, as soon as they're done measuring, then he's lending it to the lekeach. As opposed to the sefer, is talking about where the sarasur himself is directly involved. He's the one measuring out. So we're saying that then if it breaks, then it's on him. Because then at that point, since he himself is measuring it out, according to the Rashbam, the vort is then that he's not lending the keli to either one of them. He himself is having the keli in his possession so that they'll pay him for his time and effort. And therefore, if it breaks, then it's his responsibility because it was in his keli. He's the one who acquired it, and then it broke. According to Tosfos, the point is that they hired him to do the job of measuring, and he broke it, and therefore he'd be responsible because he didn't do proper shemitah. So
again, the case of our Mishnah, where we're saying that it depends whether it's filled up or not, is where the keli belongs to a third party, and that was in fact one of the Arba Midas that we learned in the Braisa on Daf Pehei, where in that case, then yes, until it's filled up, it still belongs to the Moicher, because they're in the process of measuring, and once they finish, then it belongs to the Lekech. Okay. Now, we said in the Mishnah that we described how when you're selling liquids, then you have to, after the continuous stream has stopped, you have to let three more drops come out, and then after that you can call it quits, and then anything else that still remains stuck to the sides belongs to you. So hikinu mitzis, but then the Mishnah had said that then even afterwards you tilt the container on the side and liquid continues to flow out of it. At that point, it belongs to the moicher because we said the lekeach gives up getting it. So the Gemara says, "Kisolik Rabbi Lozer, when Rabbi Lozer came up from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael, Ashkechel Ze'iri. He met up with Ze'iri, who was one of the old Talmud Chachamim from the previous generation, Omalei, and he asked him, 'Mi kan tanya de asiy Rav Midis? Is there a Tana over here?'" That Rav, somebody who specializes in the Shnayas and Braises, that Rav taught him the dinim of Midas. Now, we don't mean Midas as in the Masechta and Seder Kodshim. We mean Midas, the dinim that we're talking about over here, as far as measuring out commodities for sale. So is there anybody over here that Rav taught this Mishnah to that might be able to explain something to me? Tosfos actually brings that there are different girsois over here. Is it de asniye Rav Midas that Rav taught him these dinim of Midas, or is it that the point is because the Gemara is going to say that the Rabbi Yitzchok Bar Avdimi asked Rabbi Yitzchok Bar Avdimi, so Ze'iri pointed to Rabbi Yitzchok Bar Avdimi. He said you can ask him what Rav had to say on the subject. Then we know that Rav had lived for many, many years in Eretz Yisrael, and then in his old age, he moved to Bavel. So now, when years after that, Rabbi Lozer, who briefly had learned under Rav, when he now moved to Eretz Yisrael, he wanted to clarify a point as far as the din of our Mishnah. So he asks, back when Rav was living here in Eretz Yisrael, is there anybody that he taught these dinim and midas to where I could clarify a point with him? So Tosfos discusses now we often talk, we talk about sometimes Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Avdimi in connection with Rava, who was several generations later. So that would imply, therefore, that we have to be talking about a Talmud of Rav, like the Rashbam says. On the other hand, Tosfos says, not necessarily. It seems there were two Chachamim named Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Avdimi, and one of them lived earlier and could well have been Rav's teacher. So in that case, Rabbi Lozer might be asking, is there somebody over here who taught Rav these dinim rather than who learnt these dinim from Rav? Either way, I mean, the point is that the Rebbe Lazar is implicitly saying, I have a question about this and I want to get the answer. But as you're looking for somebody who taught Rav these dinim in the first place, who taught him this Mishnah and the explanation of it, or was you looking for somebody to whom Rav taught these dinim? Anyway, so Achvi Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Avdimi, so Ze'iri pointed to Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Avdimi. Amalei, so Rabbi Elazar goes over and asks him. So Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Avdimi says, "My kakashalach, what are you finding difficult that you need to ask me?" So Rabbi Elazar answers, "The Tnan. We learned in the Mishnah here, Kino Mitzis. We said that once the three drops have come out of the original container, if at that point he tilts it on its side and more liquid oozes out, then the seller can still keep it." So the implication is, in other words, that so that's that. So it belongs to the seller. In other words, the problem with that, Rabbi Elazar says, we learn in a Mishnah in connection with the dinim of Truma. In Masechta Trumas, we have a din also that if you're selling wine or oil of Truma to somebody else, and you're pouring it into his container, then you have the din of the three drops. But there we say hukinu mitzah, that if you did turn it on its side and liquid continued to ooze out, harezu truma, then the remainder of the liquid is still considered truma. So the question is, therefore, so here on the one hand, in our Mishnah, we're saying that after the three drops, it belongs to the moicher. Well, then the equivalent in that with selling truma should be that it's considered chulin at that point. Otherwise it should be considered, if we're saying that it's still considered truma, then we're saying, in other words, that even though you did your three drops and that's that, but nevertheless, really everything else in it is still truma as well. And if you collect it, it's still going to be truma. And that would imply, therefore, that it's going to have to go to, that it's going to have to go to the Koyan or to the Lekeach. So it should have to go to the Lekeach. And yet an Arm Mishnah was saying that the Moichah can keep it. So Rabbi Elazar says, that's my question. That's why I wanted to know who Rav taught this to, or who taught it to Rav, in order to clarify that point. Tosfos actually points out that when you get down to it, I mean, truma doesn't have to be the whole thing. Of course, truma only has to be 1/40th or 1/50th or 1/60th. So why don't we say then? Therefore, whatever amount you measure it out, as long as it's the right proportion, is going to be truma. But Tosfos says we could be talking about, let's say that you said this container is going to be truma. And therefore, that means that, so now the Mishnah in Trumas is saying that even though he was Yotze by letting the three drops drip out, but if any more comes out, it's still going to be considered Truma, because to begin with, he had designated the entire thing as Truma. Which also Tosfos points out, a distinction is with Truma, even though you have official measurements, 1/40th for when a person is generous, 1/50th if he's average, and 1/60th if he's stingy, the fact that is, it is possible to make more larger percentages of that to be truma, and there's no problem. With Meiser, Tosfos says the din would be different. If the liquid that we're talking about is going to be for Meiser Rishon or Meiser Sheni, you can't voluntarily say, I'm going to give extra, because those are supposed to be exact proportions, and if you give too much, then you're mixing up truma, and you're mixing up Meiser and Tevel. So we're talking over here specifically about truma, but the point is, again, with truma, we're saying that even though at that point you were yotze and the guy can't come and say, I want all the little bits that are stuck to the side, nevertheless, if you do collect them, they are considered truma, which means that they would go to the lekeach, whereas in our Mishnah we're saying that the moichah keeps him. Amalei. So Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Avdimi answers him, "Ha'itman Allah, Amar Rabbi Bohu." You should know, there was explained about that Rabbi Bohu said in our Mishnah, the reason why it belongs to the Moichah, Mishum Yirush Bailam Noguba. The reason is, the reason why the Chachamim said that he gets to keep it is because the Lekeach is Miyayesh on it. It would be too much of a bother to wait around until more oozes out after the three drops. As opposed to by truma, it's not a question of yush. Fine, you're miyash. You don't care to stick around for it. The fact remains that it is truma. So and you can't take away the fact that it's truma even after the three drops come out.
So there was quite a bit of discussion of Rishonim about different points about what the Gemara is saying over here. What was the Gemara even thinking in the first place to ask the question? Yeah, obviously there's a difference between Isser and Heter, between Isser v'Heter and Dinim Mominus. But so the Ramban explains that the question was that after three drops, the Mishnah says over there, you're allowed to put chulin into the barrel. Well, why should he be allowed to? Why isn't it considered that you're being mevatel truma? And the answer is just that since the whole concept of ein mevatlin isser l'chatchila, there is a concept in halacha. You can't go deliberately say, I'm going to take this isser and be mevatel it in 60 or whatever. In the case of truma, it's in 100 and say that it's going to be mutter. Fine, but that whole concept is only Dirabbanan, and so the Mishnah is saying that even afterwards, that after the three drops have come out, then yes, you can at that point you can do that. Really, the Chachamim are not going to tell you. You have to wait until it's completely empty. You're allowed at that point. You may not be able to drink what's left in there because the fact is it is truma. But on the other hand, you would be allowed to put cholin at that point and be mevato the little bit of truma in there. And then there are various other points that Rishonim make on that subject. Tosfos also points out that another way of looking at it is that you could say it's a matter of brera to begin with. When you designated that whatever percentage of this is going to be truma, you didn't know which drops are going to be left in there at the end versus which drops are going to come out when you're pouring it out. So Tosfos says the Gemara could have answered that that's a point as well. When with things daraisa, we don't say brera. And therefore, that would be another way. That would be another way of looking at it. That would be another way of looking at it as well. And that would explain why over there, if you did collect the remainder of it, then it still retains its status as truma. In that connection, by the way, an interesting point, as an interesting side point, is that Amram has a truva where somebody asked him that you wrote, he says, you wrote in connection with the halachas of korbanos that you have a din when you cooked food in a pot, you have a din when you cooked food of kodshim in a pot, then you have dinim about that you have to scour and cleanse out the pot thoroughly, but sometimes. Sometimes we're saying that, but on the other hand, with truma, we're saying you don't need to. It's enough to just it's enough to just rinse it out. And then the Rambam explains that he's basing himself on this din over here that we're saying that even though you have lots of liquid, not really lots, but whatever, you have a measurable amount of liquid left in the container after the three drops have come out, and still the Mishnah says at that point you can start using the barrel for chulin and not worry about those little bits. So Kavah Choymer, the Rambam says you shouldn't need the kash or the keli after you use it to cook truma or whatever, it should be enough just to, at most, to rinse it out. As opposed to with korbanos, again, where you actually have to kasher it. Okay. The Mishnah had said, "V'achen v'ni ein chayv lahatif v'chula." We said that a storekeeper doesn't have to do the three drops, and we said Rabbi Yehuda says on erev Shabbos im chashecha he doesn't have to. So the question is, Rabbi Yehuda al reisha koi olakula? Is Rabbi Yehuda going on the reisha, and he means to be lenient? Where the Tanakhama had said you have to do the three drops. And Rabbi Yehuda had said that on erev Shabbos im chashecha you're even a regular person, not a storekeeper, doesn't need to do that. Or maybe he's going on the Sefer and he's being machmir, where the Tanakhama is saying a storekeeper never has to, and Rabbi Yehuda is saying no, only on Erev Shabbos im chashecha. So the Tashma, the Tanya, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Erev Shabbos im chashecha, chen v'ni potter, in a braisa, Rabbi Yehuda clearly says, on Erev Shabbos, when it's getting dark, then there's the chen v'ni potter, the storekeeper is potter, from waiting until the three drops come out. He can just wait until the actual regular solid column of liquid stops, because a storekeeper is busy and he doesn't have time to wait for the three drops. So we see that Rabbi Yehuda is coming to be machmer over the Mishnah. He's saying a regular person has to do it even on Erev Shabbos in Chashecha. A storekeeper has to do it all the time, but on Erev Shabbos in Chashecha, he'd be potter. That's according to the Girsa we have in the Gemara over here. Again, we said before there are Rishonim who had the girsa the other way around, that according to the Tanakhama, the storekeeper is always potter from doing the three drops, and Rabbi Yehuda is mentioning Erev Shabbos im Chashecha, so therefore, so uh,
So therefore, according to the Rimi Gash and those other Rishonim, the question would be the other way around. If Rabbi Yehuda is going on the Resha, then he's being Machmer, because he'd be saying that the Mishnah is saying that the storekeeper does always have to do the three drops. So just like a balabais, because we said we shouldn't think because he's busy, then he gets away with it. So now Rabbi Yehuda would be saying that. So maybe Rabbi Yehuda is referring even to the reisha that we said that anything that comes out past the three drops belongs to the moicher. But Rabbi Yehuda would be saying that's only erev Shabbos in chashecha. Other times you would have to wait for more of it to drain out. Or is he going on the sefer and saying that the storekeeper does have to wait for the three drops, even though he's busy, but on Erev Shabbos and Chashecha, he's not. So again, the different girsa over here is going to parallel the different girsa that we had in the Mishnah, whether we're saying that the storekeeper has to wait for the three drops or not.
Mishnah says, Hashileach es bnoi etzochen b'ni. A person sends his son to a storekeeper, opundian biyodai, and he sends with the child a pundian coin. Now the word pundian biyodai is in parenthesis over here because not necessarily does it belong over here. The Rashbam has it. So the Rashbam has the words opunyan biyodai in his girsa. The opunyan is a coin worth two isarin. On the other hand, Marshal and Marsha talk about that. We're just talking about that. Even though the Rashbam mentions at the beginning, now one thing is you have over here in this section of Gemara, you actually have two versions of Rashbam. You have the Rashbam that's printed on the side where it is throughout the rest of the Masechta, and then in the margin you have what was added in the printing in Vilna, Pirush Rashbam HaIkri, the real Pirush of Rashbam. Apparently, what was printed in the Gemaras before that is not the Rashbam's real Pirush. Anyway. So here the Mishnah is mentioning that the child is carrying a punyan coin, but later on, the Rashbam says, "Why didn't the Mishnah mention that point?" Which implies that those words don't belong in the Mishnah. So it's just according to that girsa, without those words, means that he's sending his son to the store to buy a certain amount of oil. Anyway, modded like the iser shemen. The storekeeper measured out to the child an iser's worth of oil, and iser is half a punyan, the nosan lay se iser, and he gave him an iser as change. If we say that the child brought a punyan, then it means that the storekeeper gave him an iser of oil, and he returned him the iser of change. If we don't have the words that he carried a punyan over there, then it might mean that he gave him an actual iser's worth of oil, and then the Mishnah is going to describe what happens if the child drops the container and the oil breaks. The Rashbam actually brings that there are those who want to explain that it means. So v'nosan leis iser. So again, modded leib iser shemen. He measured out an iser of oil. V'nosan leis iser, and he gave him an iser. So the Rashbam points out there are two possible ways you could understand those words. V'nosan leis iser. It can mean that the storekeeper gave the child an iser of change, or it could mean that the child gave the storekeeper the iser that he was supposed to. But the Rashbam points out it can't mean that just the storekeeper is measured out for him an iser of oil, and then the Mishnah is going to go on to say what happens when the Mishnah says he lost the iser, means the iser is worth of oil. That doesn't really fit with the wording of the Mishnah or of the Gemara. So that's the thing. The Rashbam says we don't even have the words in the Mishnah that he gave him a punyan. It's meant to be understood. Usually a punyan would be the standard kind of coin that people would use. So therefore it's understood that the father would be sending the child with a punyan, and the storekeeper would be giving him back an iser of change, even if it doesn't say the words a punyan biyada in the Mishnah. So anyway, the point is that the child came there with a punyan. He got an issu of oil and he got an issu of change. Now what happens on the way home, the child breaks the container, so the drops or otherwise breaks the container and the oil spills. And he loses the issu of change. So who's responsible? The storekeeper is responsible to pay for everything, as we're going to see in the Gemara. Why? Rabbi Yehuda poiter. Rabbi Yehuda says he's potter. Shamanasken Shochai, because after all, the father sent the child on the understanding that that we're going to see in the Gemara, the Tanakama is saying the storekeeper is chayav, because why are you giving things like that? Why are you giving a container of oil and money to a child who doesn't know how to take care of them? Whereas Rabbi Yehuda says, listen, the father sent the child to the store, so therefore, so it was in, with the understanding that the storekeeper should do just that. Now the Chachamim do agree to Rabbi Yehuda. If the child is holding the container, unlike in the first part of the Mishnah, where the storekeeper provided the container, and then the storekeeper poured the oil into it, then the storekeeper would be potter, because then definitely the father meant that the Rashbam actually says it means the storekeeper, the Chachamim would agree that the storekeeper is potter for the payment for the breakage of the keli. On the other hand, even then the Chachamim say he would still have to take responsibility for the loss of the oil and of the coin, for reasons that we're going to see in the Gemara now. So the Gemara says, "Bishleima be'isiv shemen." I can understand as far as the coin, as far as the change, and as far as the oil. B'hal pligi, the machlokas would be as follows: Did Abanan Savri lo idui shadre? The Chacham say, when you send a child to the store, doesn't mean that you should send the oil with him. He's a child; he can't take care of such things. It means that you're sending the son with a message to the store. Please send. I need an issue of oil. I need an issue's worth of oil at home. Please send one of your workers from your store to bring it to me. So in other words, like nowadays, when you call a store and you make an order for delivery, you never meant that he should send it with a child. But Rabbi Yehuda saver the shaduri le shadre. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda says that we can say the father sent the child, and he meant that the child should actually pick up what he's buying over there. So that would explain the machlokas as far as that. Ela shaver tsloiches. But you're talking about as far as the breakage of the keli. Why should the storekeeper be chayev according to the Chachamim? Aveda midasi. Isn't it aveda midas when you give a container to a child? In effect, you're making it hefker. You don't know if he's going to return it empty. Is he going to return it? So obviously, what he means is that fine, I'm sending the child to the store with the container. You may decide to fill up the container. You may decide, you know what? I can't entrust that to a child. Let me send it with one of my delivery boys. And the coin also fine. The coin itself is also aveda midas, but at least when the storekeeper is returning the change, then again, he had no business doing that. He should have realized that I don't have to do anything with the child. I'll just, okay, he comes and tells me his father needs an iser's worth of oil. Fine, I'll take it from there and I'll send it with one of my delivery boys. So the question is, why in the Mishnah is the Tanakama making the storekeeper chayev even for the container that the father sent? At the end of the mission, we're talking about where the father sent the container, but we're saying over here that the storekeeper is also going to be responsible for the empty container itself. So why is he chayev? The father, so we are talking about the father gave the empty container to the child. Isn't that aveda midas? So he understands that he might get it back empty, he might get it back full, but he entrusted it to a child. Why should the storekeeper be responsible to pay for it? So Omer of Hoshia Hocha Balabais Merchut Sloichis Askinan, because we're talking about that the Balabais, the father himself actually sells containers. So therefore, he's willing to sell it to the storekeeper. If the storekeeper wants it, then he'll buy it. So we're talking about that the storekeeper looked at took the container and wanted to check it out and see whether he wants to buy it. And then he returned it to the child. And therefore, the reason he's chayav for it now is Kiddush Shmuel, is based on what Shmuel says. Exactly that if a person takes a keli from a craftsman intending to check it and see whether it's something worth buying, the nanas biyode, and an onus happens and it breaks. So Shmuel says chayev, so he'd be chayev for paying it, because once he we assume he's going to find it whole and able to buy it. And the Rashbam also adds, we're talking about that the price of it has already been established, the price of it is already known. So therefore, so now in effect he was koine it. So now when he gives it back to the child, then and he gives it back to the child, then he's the one causing it, in effect, to be damaged because he's giving it to a child who's not a ben das, where he already picked it up and therefore became chayav b'achriyusay. So this is the Rashbam and Tosfos referred to. There's a sugya on the subject in Masechet Nedarim. Tosfos points out there's a bit of discussion. Why is that? Is it that we say that he's considered a lekeach, or is it that we're saying that he's considered a shoyl? That whatever the case, the point is, so therefore, so in this case over here, he acquired the keli by picking it up and looking at it, and now when he gives it back to the child, that's careless of him, and therefore he's chayev. So the problem with that is, as the Gemara is going to say, it comes out then that what Shmuel is saying, lema de Shmuel tanoihi, it comes out then that Shmuel's din is only according to Rabbi Yehuda. It comes out that that Shmuel's din is only according to the Chachamim in our Mishnah. We would prefer to say, fine, granted, the Halacha may be like the Chachamim, but nevertheless, we would still prefer to say that Shmuel's din goes according to everybody. So we would rather have a different explanation of the Mishnah. And therefore, so the Gemara will continue. We'll continue tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, and explain what exactly the scenario is over here. Okay.